Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You hang up being there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
All right, today on It's My House, we got a little study session going. Matter of fact, we're going to even do an offline workshop on this. Today's podcast is titled Agreements versus Contracts and the Statute of Frauds. Live stream number 619-768-2945. Once again, live stream number 619-768-2945. We're going to get in today, once again, what's the distinction between an agreement and a contract? And we're going to get into the statute of frauds, and we're going to put together a 20-hour workshop on it. We might not even have to go 20 hours, but in any event, we're going to start on this. So as we take this little musical interlude for about 3 minutes, get your pens and papers out. What do you need to record so you can take notes? And we're going to get into the distinctions once again between agreements. What is an agreement? What is a contract? What's the statute of frauds?
Down.
unilateral agreement with the contract in the statute of frauds, live stream number 619-768-2945. What is the distinction between an agreement and a contract? Well, for starters, many agreements are not contracts, but all contracts are agreements. All right, let's get down to the fundamental basics on this. An agreement is essentially a promise or a set of promises that, for the most part, are not enforceable by law. Contracts, on the other hand, is a promise or a set of promises that are enforceable by law. So let's say you had a widget. Party A had a widget and sold it to Party B for X amount of dollars. And there was nothing in writing regarding the transaction. And Party A, for some reason, was dissatisfied with the widget and wanted their money back. Unless Party B that sold them that widget was feeling good that day. Basically, Party A is just out of luck. They didn't have anything in writing. It was an agreement, but due to the fact that it wasn't in writing, they can't take it into a court of law and try to get that agreement enforced, because the agreement never became a contract. So an agreement, once again, is a promise or a set of promises not enforceable by law. A contract is a promise or a set of promises that is enforceable by law. And a lot of people get into situations where a contract from the giddy up could have saved both parties a lot of grief, or in some cases friendships, and in some cases not have the family split up. Now, with that basic LA definition of the distinction between I tried to break it down real simple. Let's go. There's some distinctions of contracts that we need to be aware of. Let's see. And I want to. Okay, let me see here. I mean, I don't want that. Let's see. All right, here we go. Types of contracts. Just on a simplified end, you have express contracts, you have implied contracts. Let's start off with that. An implied contract is a contract that is not in writing. Some implied contracts might be able to be enforced in the court of law, many are not, but it's your word against my word, just implied. I got a widget, I'll sell you. Matter of fact, I'll give you an example. Oh, it's my house. How we got started here. Have a house and a person needed a place to stay. I said, well, If look, you can stay in my house, not pay any rent, just pay, you know, whatever you use for, you know, utilities and internet. And you know, handshake deal. Nothing in writing. That was an implied contract. That was an implied contract. Now that later blew up in my face. Had I had an express contract, is a contract that has been reduced down to writing. Had I had an express contract, then I would have had, actually would have been benefited both parties the way I see it. But I had an implied contract, and the thing is, I didn't even know I had an implied contract. That's a whole nother podcast. All right, so you got express contracts, which those are contracts that have been reduced down in writing. You have implied contracts. That's all verbal or oral, you know, nothing in writing. That might be enforceable in the court of law. In many cases, it's not enforceable in the court of law. You have bilateral contracts, and you have unilateral contracts. Now, a bilateral contract is a promise for a promise. Okay, I promise I'll pay you $5 if you promise to give me a Big Mac. That's a bilateral contract. I promise to do X for you if you, you know, if you promise, you know, whatever you're going to promise. That's a bilateral contract. Unilateral contract, promise based on performance. Unilateral contracts are a promise based on a performance. I promise to pay you $80 if you cut my lawn. We don't have anything in writing, but that's my promise to you, to Mr. Landscaper or Miss Landscaper. I promise you $80 if you cut my lawn, and if you go out and perform by cutting the lawn, then you can come to me and get $80. So a unilateral contract is a promise for performance, or based on a performance. If Ms. or Ms. Landscaper does not cut the lawn, I'm not obligated to pay Ms. or Ms. Landscaper $80. All right. Let's see what else we have here. Okay, we have I don't want to get too deep, but let's see. Let's go. I'm trying to stick to the fundamentals. Let's see. Then there are elements to a contract. There's offer. There's acceptance. I'm just trying to keep this really, really simple because there's a lot to contracts. And I want to sort of spoon feed during this podcast. Okay, so let's go over the basic concept. There's more. I'm just giving you bite-sized spoonful of nuggets at this point. Okay, so types of contracts: express, that means it's in writing. That's oral contracts, which is oral, verbal. Unilateral, that's a promise, form of performance, and bilateral, a promise for a promise. Now, there are more, there are other types of basic contracts, but I'm spoon feeding with the basic fundamentals of this, well, some of the fundamentals during this podcast this morning. And of course, you can go online and get details on this. There's a lot of information written on it, and as well as videos on it as well. But I couldn't find a video this morning that would really simplify it the way I wanted it to be simplified, because this stuff builds on itself. Let's see. There's also need to become aware of when you're dealing with contracts, particularly written contracts, there's the common law and then there's the UCC, Uniform Commercial Code. Contracts, when you're looking at a contract, you need to know which is the governing law of that specific type of contract. Is that contract governed by common law, black letter law, or is it governed by the UCC, Uniform Commercial Code? Now, granted, in all 50 states, I'm giving you a basic sanitized explanation here this morning, because in all 50 states they have different standards. So I'm giving you a real just clean sanitized explanation and stuff this morning. But either way, a contract, and we're talking about commercial contracts, are basically governed, that contract is governed by the UCC, Uniform Commercial Code, or common law. Now, if the contract is valued at, if the widget, particularly if it's a movable widget, if it's valued at $500 or more, then the law that governs it is the Uniform Commercial Code. Below that amount, then it's governed by common law. Statute of frauds. The statute of frauds, matter of fact, let me read it to you direct, because a lot of people get caught up in things and they don't know which way to turn, so they might try to go to the Better Business Bureau or the DA's office. And the Better Business Bureau, I'm giving you LA's interpretation of the Better Business Bureau. The Better Business Bureau is a membership organization. And the way I see it, it's a, what's the right term? It's a, it can serve as a safety net for businesses that join to act as a mediator, you know, as a mediator between a dissatisfied customer and the merchant. And the safety net is if that dissatisfied customer or angry customer, you know, some people get angry. It's a safety net in that the local Better Business Bureau can get that dissatisfied or angry customer and give you a heads up and bring you to an mediation so the problem will get resolved between you and the dissatisfied angry customer. Because if that safety net is not there, many times that dissatisfied angry customer to go to the DA's office. And then when you get the government involved, then you got a whole new kettle of fish, which is, can be, even if you're in the right, could be very expensive to get that resolved. All right. Now, where was I going before that? Statue of Frauds. So for you merchants out there, it might be a good idea to join the Better Business Bureau or with new fields there are new fields opening up all the time. And some, you know, you might want to get together with a few other merchants and start a specialized niche market Better Business Bureau, where basically you can police yourselves and catch complaints so you can resolve them within your own industry versus having that customer go to the government to try to get something resolved. All right, statute of frauds. The statute of frauds refers to the requirement that certain types of contracts be memorialized in writing, signed by the party to be charged with the sufficient content to evidence the contract. Traditionally, statute of frauds requires a signed writing in the following circumstances. There's six of them. Contracts in the consideration of marriage, contracts that cannot be performed within 1 year, contracts for the transfer and interest in land, contracts by the executor of a will to pay debts of a state with their own money, contracts for the sale of goods totaling $500 or more, contracts in which one party becomes surety, acts as a grantor for another party's debt and obligation. And many people get caught because they got involved with a transaction that's valued at more than $500. And morality is the contract. Person's a Christian, doesn't say it's a contract. Your morality and my morality are two different things. A lot of people who think they should have a contract or a person should do right, whatever your definition of right is in your imagination, might not be what the other person is. And at the time you two did a transaction, it was just an agreement. You promised, person A promised something to B, in a bilateral way, nothing in writing, and then maybe 3 months later, one party's unhappy, but all you two ever had between you was an agreement. That was it. An agreement that was not enforceable by law. So what do? Take the L, go to the DA's office, and when you do that, you're basically in my opinion, now this is just LA's opinion, you're giving away a lot of your rights. I think everybody should know the basics of law, because there's a whole bunch of laws on this books that you can, but if you know about them, they're not difficult to learn. If you know about them, you can protect your rights. Of course, if you don't know your rights, you don't have any rights. And then that's when you go to the Better Business Bureau trying to get, which, like I said, that it does have some functionality on a positive end, because it can be a safety net only for those merchants who decide to sign up for that. Once again, get familiar with the distinction between an agreement and a contract. Once again, an agreement is a promise or a set of promises. That's it. That are not, that could be enforceable, may not be enforceable in court. More than times likely it's not enforceable in court, because it's your word against their word with no evidence. Then you have contracts. A contract, a valid contract, is enforceable in a court of law. The other things that you need to learn under contract law, like contract formation, you know, offer and acceptance, consideration, what is consideration, defenses to formation, because sometimes somebody can get into a contract, but it could be something that's defective. So lack of capacity. Like one thing, like a lot of people, that these senior citizens that get into reverse mortgages, I am convinced that a lot of these people just don't have it. They're suffering from dementia. Not all of them, but many of them. And if you can prove lack of capacity, mental capacity, then you can get a voided contract. These are, and a lot of people that, you know, that you have parents, grandparents, you need to become aware of this, because you might have to save the family house one day. Another defense against formation is duress. And when I had this house jacker that was trying to take my house, I got a text. I was on my way to court one day, and I got a text from the house jacker saying, if I would sign the house over to them, they would stop court action. Now, some people, that can really get some people. And you know what? That strategy has worked for a number of people. You got somebody that's just giving you hell. They won't get out of your house. And just to get a peace of mind, go away, get out of my life. Strategy has worked. But if you can, because basically that's extortion. But if you do something like that, if you can document it, or if you got into it and went too far, duress. So defense, you need to become familiar with contract formation, defenses to formation, contract interpretation, excuses for non-performance, which are, you know, for other that, misrepresentation, mistake, frustration of purpose, impossibility, impracticability, illegality. There are people out here that contract for murder. Well, murder is illegal. Therefore, if it's illegal, there is no contract. And that's an extreme example. But it could be some kind of city ordinance, state law, whatever, or whatever on the book that says it's illegal, but you don't know it's illegal, then there's no contract. If there's any illegal act, that it's not a contract, it's void. Unclean hands. I'll break this down on the city level. Let's say you're a landlord, and you have a tenant that that won't get out of your place. So you decide, I'm going to give you two examples. You decide, you know what, you're going to go to landlord-tenant court or rent court to evict these people out of your place. But then when you go down there, you find out there's no record of you being a landlord. You did not get your certificate of occupancy for rental property. That's unclean hands as far as that particular local government, because you don't have a license to operate a rental property. Now, the cleaner hands, you simply pay whatever the rental fee is, and then you can take that person, file your case in rental court in that particular jurisdiction and proceed. That's one example of unclean hands. The other example of unclean hands, once again, landlord-occupant situation. All right. You got a license. You have your certificate of occupancy. You got all your paperwork paid up, posted, just like the city tells you to do. However, what this occupant, hostile occupant does is they call the building inspector. Well, here's what they do. They don't tell you nothing. Here's what, as a matter of fact, I'm going to tell you, this is a true case that happened to me. These are some nasty niggas. Nasty. They shit. I'm giving it to you real and raw. They shit in the toilet where the feces or the collection of feces, because one person couldn't do this, where the feces stacked up in the toilet bowl all the way to the brim. And then they shit and pee the bathtub. Now, after they did that, those nasty motherfuckers, then that they didn't tell me shit. Then they called housing on me, code enforcement. Now, code enforcement, this is the problem I had with code enforcement, but you know what? Code enforcement basically is a profit-making agency for the city. That's what housing is. I mean, code enforcement. And they should have thought, you know what, when they came out, you can't, come on. The commode is filled up with shit to the fucking brim, man. But who do they blame? Who's got to get it corrected? Mr. or Ms. Landlord. So I was written up for that. All right, now, let's go back to, I got all my paperwork in order. All right. Now, in this case, I didn't get fined. But let's say I got fined for this violation. Let's say something like $1,000. I would have to pay the city the $1,000 fine first, because until I paid that fine, I would have unclean hands. That's how the reality in a landlord-tenant situation or a rental housing or hostile occupant situation, that's how that works. If you owe the city any money, you have unclean hands until you pay that fine or whatever the city wants from you. In this case, these particular people weren't that sophisticated, but I have had sophisticated people where they will create code violations. They'll create code violations, and then they will call housing, the code enforcement people, and all the code enforcement people care about when they show up is, all right, this is not up to code, that's not up to code, they're not responsible who did what, when, or where. All they care about is Mr. or Ms. Landlord, property owner, you have to get these code violations abated, corrected. Now, with that in mind, and this, we have to do a separate podcast on this. When you're dealing with anybody living in your house, be it a rental house or what have you, you need to have in writing procedure on reporting possible code violations. You need to have a system set up where it's in black and white, because I'm telling you, if you don't have, you can have a regular rental agreement, but if you don't have these particulars in your rental agreement, I guarantee you that these people, they will create code violations, and then they'll call housing, and then housing will call you. And when housing calls you, I mean, you're the last to know about it. Anyway, that there's a lot more to contracts, remedies, things of that nature. But there's a bunch of laws already on the books on where you can protect yourself if you just know some of the fundamentals. Now, I just gave a couple of teaspoons of, you know, the distinction between agreement. So once again, agreement is a, you know, a promise or a set of promises that could be enforceable by law, may not be enforceable by law. And contracts are enforceable by law. A proper contract. I want to see, you got the different, I think I named the four basic distinctions. They're more than that. Express, implied, bilateral, unilateral. There's more than that, but I'm spoon feeding this morning. Statute of frauds, you need to become familiar with the six elements of that. And with a contract, particularly when we're dealing with commerce, is that kind of, what set of rules govern that particular contract? Is it the UCC, Uniform Commercial Code, or is it common law? And then, of course, state by state, they have their various distinctions. And we're going to organize something where just to give the people the basics on that. Even with even relationships, a lot of men who end up having disputes with the mother of their children. It's not that the system has the laws stacked in favor of women. That's really not it at all. The disconnect is the typical man or the average man out here does not know the laws on the books. Once again, I can't say it enough. If you don't know your rights, you don't have any. Oftentimes, now granted, that there are a lot of safety nets out here for women. There are a lot of safety nets out here for women. I mean, if the mother of the child, shelters, government agency, there are a lot of safety nets out here. But for men, there are a lot of laws on the books that if you knew those, you can be well protected. And if you knew them, you can defend yourself. Problem is, a lot of men don't know these laws. So if you don't know these laws, you're defenseless. And one of the biggest tools that men can use to defend themselves is family court. But most men they know very little about how family court operates. And then if she finds out before you do, then you're the one that's going to get beat up in family court. So if you got any children out there, whatever, or you're in a volatile situation, you know, like I say, learn what a contract is versus an agreement and learn what torts are. There's a lot there that you can protect yourself with. And then one day we'll bring on a couple of legal eagles here that can answer your questions if you have anything specific. All right. Let's go to a clip I haven't played on here in a while.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. I mean, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change come to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 a piece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, This goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay? This Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh, oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She drug you, motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga kid. That nigga hurting himself.
You from New State.
Brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments, and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations, like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African-Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, "See, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me." No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-whack movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the "can't we all just get along" flavored Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-civil rights movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them. Which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place, there's some dumb Negro that says, "I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people." Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing "Ballin' on Baltic Avenue," I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, "Go right on ahead." He let me do it and said, "I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about." So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, "Son, you gotta own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block." And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
Okay, well, all through that, because contracts, there are contracts everywhere. Everything basically involves contracts. And I'll bring somebody on here to illustrate that one day, a lawyer. But even in that last piece, to get control of that block and do things with it, you're going to have to know something about contracts. In any event, once again, agreements versus contracts. A lot of this stuff is online through YouTube videos, literature, websites you can read online. Once again, an agreement is just a promise or a group of promises that may be enforceable or may not be enforceable in a court of law. Many times it is not. Okay, it's not based on, don't depend on, first thing, don't depend on your memory. You know what? Bill Cosby, the Bill Cosby case is a real good illustration of contracts, although you probably didn't hear it brought up in court or in none of the commentary. But essentially, once again, let's look at matter of fact, Bill Cosby, this is a good matter of fact, let's talk about that. Okay, now, once again, an agreement is a promise or a set of promises that may or may not be enforceable in a court of law. A contract can be enforced in a court of law. Now, Bill Cosby, I'm going to say allegedly, met a lot of women over the years. And remember now, two of the basic fundamental forms of contract are express contracts, that's something in writing, implied contracts, those are typically verbal, oral, okay? Now, so Bill Cosby met a number of women over the years, you know, some 40 years ago, some 30 years ago, some 10 years ago, what have you. And some of those women, knowing Bill Cosby's family background, married, kids, all that, you know, for whatever reason, they had an affair. He called them rendezvous. Sometimes he had a rendezvous. Sometimes he had a couple of drinks together. Some of them probably, I don't know, you know, because back during the 60s in that Hefner's Playboy Mansion, I don't know, I wasn't there. You know, try this pill, try that pill. There was a whole lot of pill popping 40 years ago. All right, now they got meth. And a lot of those women, how many, I don't know. All right, some of those women agreed to take the pill or agreed to whatever with Bill Cosby. Okay, those were implied contracts. All right, nothing in writing, nothing in writing. All right, 10, 15, 40 years later, some of these women, for whatever reason, get pissed off at Bill, and they want to take him to court. So they go to the DA's office. They want to put him in jail, so they go to the DA's office. And why is it with all these women that came out of the woodwork, none of these DAs, except for one, none of the DAs could get a grand jury indictment against Bill Cosby? There was nothing. They had no evidence. It was an implied contract. They agreed, for whatever reason, to hang out with Bill. We don't know what happened, but they didn't have enough evidence, nothing in writing, other than their word, which was their part, with their version of an implied contract. And therefore, no criminal charges with all those women. Now, the Constant case, which, you know, we're going to bring some people in really to break that one down, what happened with that one. He did have a written agreement. Now, we'll go into how it was unsealed and all that. But he did have a written agreement with her. He did have a written agreement with her. And that was the only case out of all those women that accused Bill Cosby of, you know, the unsealed contract, and used that to hang him. But it took him two tries of them to get him on that. Because in court, it was his word against her word. Just like with Kavanaugh. You know, they found four women that said something happened. No evidence. He got confirmed. And the thing is, when you don't have an agreement or a contract in writing, you know, some people can't remember where they put their car keys 5 minutes ago. So 5, 10, 15, 40 years from now, people's memories are not, you know, it's difficult for the judge or the jury to buy your story or their story. So basically, even with relationships, you know, the Mike Tyson thing, him and Desiree Washington, that was the contract there too. It wasn't written. It was an express contract. Okay, it's 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. Come over to my hotel. And then from there, they had the contract, the oral contract, no pun intended, went a little bit deeper. They started to have sex. Then according to Desiree Washington, she said stop, and the court, and he didn't. Then he caught a rape charge. We'll go over this again because, like I say, it's on other podcasts and bring in other people with different points of view from a legal point. I mean, you know, people that work this stuff every day. Because it's very, you got to get the basics down. And if you got any young people in your family, even preteens, they need to be in on this. You know, so 10, 20, 40 years from now, they won't be facing any criminal charges. Or they can save the house. You know, protect it. Let's go to our phone lines here. Area code 314, your mic is open.
Hey, L.A., what's going on?
Well, another day. It's sunshiny here in Florida, at least this part.
Well, I like that balding on Baltic. I got another song I'm going to send you. It's called Just Cause I'm Black. Oh, you probably already got it, don't you?
I haven't heard that one. Send it to me.
But, you know, you're talking about contracts and in agreements. You know, at one point in time in my industry here in the St. Louis area, they just shook hands. They didn't sign contracts. But you can't do that nowadays.
No.
But when I signed a contract, my contract was based on, in the body of the contract, it was based on the bid submittal that I base the award of the contract on. And of course, in those submittals, those bid submittals, I indicate what I'm going to do and what I'm not going to do. I avoid myself of errors, others' errors and omissions. And I stipulate other things that's pertaining to the work that's going to be performed. And, of course, the payment agreement.
Right.
And insurance, especially when it goes to excess liability. Because if we ever worked around railroad tracks where you have either light rail passenger cars or trains coming through, you had to carry that excess liability in case something happened.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the type of contracts that we engaged in. And if there were some changes, if there were some changes in that required something that was otherwise not mentioned on the bid document, then we had to have the work agreement, or should I say the worksheet, that recorded the amount of labor and material and supplies required to get that extra work done. It had to be signed first and then signed afterwards.
You know, Pianki, what you just mentioned, a lot of small contractors, I already know you know this, that's where they get caught with their pants down. They don't have any provision in their contract for that. So, you know, they give a bid, and then they start work, and then they go behind this wall, and they find out, okay, wait a minute, this was, you know, and they don't have anything in the original contract, so the homeowner is trying to keep them, you know, to that, you know, the original thing that they signed.
But right, yeah, which was just a general description. It didn't get down into detail.
Yeah, right.
And anything that's unforeseen, you know, you shouldn't be required to handle unless you make those stipulations. But anyway, I just wanted to add that maybe listeners who will want to take it someplace else.
We're going to cut it short today because what time is it? I got to prepare for somebody to come and notarize something today, so I need to get prepared now. So that note, all right, thanks, Bianca, for that. Thanks, everybody, for calling in and, listening. We'll be back, Thursday? Yeah. We'll be back tomorrow because, like I said, I'm waiting for a notary to come here. Then I got to go mail some documents out myself. On that note, everyone have a good rest of the day.
At Jiffy Lube, we car about cars. In fact, we're kind of obsessed. That's why we've been taking car off business with quick quality oil changes and service for over 40 years. And with things like our Carful Vehicle Review, where our experts check, fill, clean, and inspect your vehicle, you'll know we'll car for your car like we car for our own. Jiffy Lube. Car more.
Visit JiffyLubeDC.com to find a Jiffy Lube service center near you.